You are listening to Sparking Wholeness with Erin Carey, where we talk about all things related to nutrition for mind, body, and soul. Are you ready? Let's do this. Hey everybody, it's Erin Carey and welcome back to Sparking Wholeness. Today I am recording a solo episode and it's going to be just me talking to you, sharing some things that I have been thinking, some things I've been processing about mental health, about nutrition. Buckle up, I've got a lot of things to cover, and in typical Erin fashion, it might not really go in any particular order, but it is all connected, and that is the beauty of functional medicine. In case you did not know, I am a certified functional medicine practitioner. I got certified in applied functional medicine, which means applying the practice of functional medicine, applying the principles, applying the tools of looking at not just our symptoms and trying to support the symptoms, but looking at what is causing the symptoms. And I truly believe that when I started addressing my own health and my kids' health with that perspective in mind, that's when I was able to see things completely transform. For me, so much of my early life mental health struggles were wrapped up in the fact that I had poor gut health. I had nutrient deficiencies. I had trauma. I had really bad immune health. And all of those things at some point piled up and created a domino effect. And that happened at the brain level. And that increased my depression. It increased my hypomania, my racing thoughts, to the point where even my freshman year of college, I had a true manic episode. And it was pretty destructive. It was really confusing for me. I was never really given ways to process it because they just said, well, you have this thing called bipolar disorder. Your brain works differently. This is that. All you can do is take meds and sleep more. And I was left in a tailspin of, oh my gosh, there's something wrong with me. My brain is broken. This is just how it is. And it's always going to be this way. Nobody told me what caused it. Nobody told me what I could even do to get better or to recover from that other than take your meds, make sure you sleep. Well, now we know so much more about mental health and practical tools. And that's why I'm really excited. In a couple weeks, I'm going to be interviewing Dr. Georgia Ead. She is the author of a new book called Change Your Brain. Nope, just kidding. That's not what it's called. It's called Change Your Diet, Change Your Brain. I mean, you can change your brain to change your diet, change your diet, change your brain. I guess it does work both ways, doesn't it? But yes, she is pioneering research on disorders like bipolar disorder and even schizophrenia and looking to see how nutrition can help reverse those symptoms and help people to feel better. Because when our brain isn't working, nothing is working. And so that's really what I want to start with today. I want to start with this whole concept of mental health nutrition. You really can't have optimal mental health without the raw materials, the ingredients to make neurotransmitters. Now, neurotransmitters, when we think about neurotransmitters, typically, historically speaking, been taught to think only about serotonin, about dopamine, and that's kind of it. But there are so many neurotransmitters that impact our brain. And not to mention, there are neuropeptides, and more research is being done on neuropeptides, which is a chain of amino acids that impacts how we feel at the mood level. It impacts our hunger hormones. It impacts thyroid function. In fact, some people would consider thyroid stimulating hormone to be, that's TSH, which is usually recorded on lab work or tested with lab work, that some people consider that to be a neuropeptide. So that is something that is impacting everything. And so we have all sorts of things that are impacting our mood, not just neurotransmitters, but our gut microbiota, the microbiome, the bacteria in our gut that is synthesizing neurotransmitters and affecting even if our neurotransmitters are going to be made and make it to the brain level. That is all a really big part of the puzzle. I recently put together a Food is Mood guide, and it is a free download on my website. If you want to save it, I will link it in the show notes, but I'm going to read through it just for some practical tools to get started in your Food is Mood journey, no matter if you are struggling with an active mental illness, or you are dealing with an autoimmune disease, or you are just in perimenopause, which we talk so much about on this show, and I'll be talking about a little bit more at the end because it is I mean, it's something that's really booming in social media and booming in the media in general because so many women have been medically gaslit for their symptoms, when in fact we know that your brain is changing in all sorts of ways when you're going through perimenopause. So I'm going to start with this food as mood guide, and this will be a practical tool for anybody. Think about using it even with your kids, because our kids need mental health support more than ever. So just a reminder, starting out, what you eat plays a direct role in how you feel. By balancing your nutrients and getting rid of ingredients that increase mental health issues, you're going to support a balanced, thriving brain. So just the basics of mental health nutrition. The food that you eat impacts the formation of chemical messengers that affect how you feel. So the most popular neurotransmitters, I've already mentioned them, serotonin we think of as a happy neurotransmitter. It actually does modulate even your bowel regularity and how you use the bathroom and go number two and excrete toxins. But serotonin modulates that. Serotonin modulates your sleep. Serotonin modulates just that feeling of safety and a feeling that you have enough, but it is responsible for an anti-anxiety happy feeling. Dopamine, we think of that as our get up and go neurotransmitter. That is the one that we also associate with ADHD. People with ADHD either have like super low dopamine and they're always chasing that dopamine, right? Or they are getting dopamine and then just like running through it really quickly. And so ADHD is often thought of as a dopamine dysregulation issue. And there are a lot of people that don't have ADHD or haven't been diagnosed with ADHD and still struggle with this. I think about even addiction and substance abuse and how a lot of times that's just chasing the dopamine. And a lot of times it's a lack of B6, which forms dopamine along with tyrosine. So these neurotransmitters, serotonin, dopamine are the most popular ones, but there are other ones. There's GABA. GABA is a really popular one. And then we have endorphins, which is more of a neuropeptide, like I mentioned before. And these things are made from amino acids that you get in protein. They're made from vitamins, from minerals that act as cofactors. And this all comes from the food that we consume. So if you are struggling with your mood health, or you just feel off, or you're not really sure why you don't have motivation, or you're not really sure why you feel anxious or irritable, well, you might not be getting all the nutrients you need to make your happy mood chemicals. And another issue here that I think is important to address, even if you are on an SSRI, it's a selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor, the purpose of that, right, is to keep serotonin around to prevent the reuptake at the brain level so you're happier longer. Over time, your brain and your body are so incredible. We have enzymes at the brain level that go in and destroy excess of anything, because excess of anything is not good. And there is one particular enzyme, MAO, monoamine oxidase, that will go in and destroy any excess serotonin if it's being left out for too long. So if you have been on an SSRI for a long time, and I was on one for 18 years, you might start at some point to feel like it's not working for you and you have to change your dose, or you feel like, oh, it worked for a little bit, but now it doesn't. It could be that it is that compensatory mechanism of the enzyme that's going in there and going, oh, we don't like serotonin to be out for too long, so we're going to get rid of it. So long term, you end up not actually getting any relief from that neurotransmitter support. On the flip side, some people find that they are treatment resistant. And that is a term that has to do with the fact that somebody is being prescribed all sorts of medication and it's just not working. What is wrong with this person? Well, it might not be the person, it might be the treatment. And if you are not making serotonin at the gut level, if you're not getting it from food, then it's quite possible that those medications are not really going to work for you. If you are on a medication like an SSRI, don't you want it to work better for you? Yes, yes, you do. So this is the way. Eat enough protein, get vitamins and minerals from food, and you are going to find that your medication is going to work even better for you. If you're not on medication and you are questioning, should I get on medication? Is that going to be right for me? And that is something that you definitely need to weigh the, you know, pros and cons with your practitioner. I am not one to tell you whether you should be on medication or not, and I would never tell you to get off of your medication without the support of a knowledgeable practitioner. But if you're wondering that, maybe try some of these things first and see if you can respond well to some food changes in order to give your body those neurotransmitters that help to make you feel better. Aside from that, we're going to get to this in a minute. If this doesn't work, it might not be a serotonin issue. We really, when we are throwing medications at somebody who's suffering from anxiety, depression, whatever, we're not actually doing this with labs in mind. We're not taking labs to measure serotonin. That's not a thing. We're just guessing that serotonin is causing the mood issues. Doesn't work for everybody. In fact, I think the efficacy is around 30%. So for about 70% of people, they're not getting support. I have a lot of questions from people about how to get off of medication. So this is going to be helpful for you as well. I'm not advising, again, don't go off of a medication without a practitioner who knows what they're doing to walk you through it. But you can get started by adding in more nutrients. So what should you eat? Choose whole foods that are as natural as possible to create safety in your body. That means eating more real foods like fruits, veggies, nuts, seeds, meat, eggs, and fish. This is what your body recognizes best to be able to break down and digest. And hopefully you are eating in a non-stress state. We'll talk about that so that you can digest these things and absorb them the best way you can. So every day, focus on getting 20 to 30 grams of protein at each meal. 20 is a minimum, 30 is optimal. Try to get 5 different kinds of veggies each day. When you are focusing on like maybe even 5 different colors of veggies, that's going to give you enough variety to where you can intentionally go, oh, have I had my 5 yet? No, well, then I'm going to add in another one. There's nothing wrong with that. We get so afraid of adding in more food. Like that's the problem. But by adding in a variety of fruits and vegetables, that is going to help support your gut microbiome. It's going to create microbial diversity so that you can synthesize and make those neurotransmitters in the best way possible. 2 different fruits every day. We get afraid of fruit because of sugar, because of fructose, but fruit contains so many powerful phytonutrients that can be beneficial in creating those cofactors to synthesize neurotransmitters like serotonin and dopamine. And then focus on getting 1/2 of your body weight in ounces of water. A lot of people forget this. Even I struggle with this. The other day, I intentionally started drinking more water because I thought, well, I carry my same, my simple modern cup. I don't do the Stanley cup because I only like to do things when they go out of style or before they're in style, but while they're in style, like I don't feel like I want to go with the trend, you know? So I have my simple modern cup that has a straw and I carry it with me everywhere. I call it my emotional support water bottle, but some days I am so busy, I am not filling it up as much as I should. So lately I've been more intentional about that and I definitely have been feeling better. So even just aiming for one of these things. I talked about protein, veggies, fruit, but maybe just start with getting 1/2 your body weight in ounces of water. So keep in mind that some ingredients are going to negatively impact your cell membrane health, the neurotransmitter signaling, the nutrient absorption, gut microbial balance, or they just make you feel bad. That impacts your entire body. So be aware of trigger ingredients. I'm going to get to those in a minute and see where you can limit those. Those are typically found in our ultra processed foods, restaurant foods, things like that. You aren't what you eat. You are what you can digest, absorb, and get past your cell membrane. That's why cell membrane health matters. Practicing slowing down, chewing more, and eating slowly in a calm state will help you digest your food better. So take a minute to reflect on how you eat. I want you to think about yesterday. How did you eat yesterday? Not what did you eat, but how did you eat standing up at all? Did you rush through your meal? Did you eat while you were frustrated with your husband or your kids? When you focus on a few different change-ups for your eating hygiene, you really can optimize an environment of rest and digest for your body. So quick tips for mealtime best practices. Number 1, eat sitting down for at least 20 minutes. It takes 20 minutes for your gut to tell your brain that you've had food. Otherwise, you might stay in that, I'm eating and I'm eating a lot and I'm still not full. You might stay in that state. We don't want that. Number 2, breathe before you start eating and in between bites. Deep breathing, like, okay, I just did it because I've been talking really fast and I need to take a deep breath anyway. But do this during a meal. And maybe even challenge yourself to get 20 breaths during a meal. So 20 minutes of eating, 20 breaths, and then number three, chew every bite of food 20 times or until liquid. Some things we really just can't chew that much, but if you're eating nutrient-dense whole foods, you absolutely can chew your bite 20 times. Like I think about a steak. I feel like I give my jaw a workout and I eat tender steak. I'm not talking about, you know, well done. I will not do that. I eat steak that's pretty red in the middle, but I still have to chew quite a bit to liquefy that steak. And when I am eating animal protein like that, I want to chew even more because the only thing I can control with how I digest that steak and how I pull apart minerals like iron and zinc is that I'm breaking it all down until it's liquid. Everything else is under the pressure of my body, of my stress response, and it really is going to depend on the stomach acid I produce and the enzymes I produce, and I can't control those things that happen internally. I can control how much I'm chewing. So while we are on the subject of eating hygiene and taking control of how you eat, not necessarily what you eat, I want to take a second and thank our sponsor for today's episode. Today's episode is sponsored by Thorne. Like I've mentioned in this episode, being in control of my health means being mindful of what I put in my body and how I put it in my body and how I eat as much as what I eat. And that is why I am so excited that Thorne is a sponsor for this podcast episode. Thorne is spelled T-H-O-R-N-E. I recommend Thorne supplements to my clients all the time. One of the reasons is that Thorne takes a personalized, innovative, and scientific approach to health and wellness with their supplements. They manufacture all their supplements in the U.S. using top-notch ingredients that are sourced globally. Plus, they team up with leading medical professionals to bring you highly effective nutritional supplements. Whether it's the Basic B Complex, which is one of my favorites, their creatine, I use that as well, magnesium, citrate, or bisglycinate, or the Basic Prenatal, Thorne's got all the supplements that I need to help promote and maintain my health goals. One of my favorite products that I recommend just about all the time to my clients is GI Relief. GI Relief is a combination of various mucilaginous herbs that are so helpful for maintaining and supporting a healthy digestive system. I recommend this, like I said, all the time to my clients, but I also use it myself, and it truly does contribute to, like the name says, GI relief. One of the reasons that I promote Thorne supplements is because I actually notice a difference when I take them. You don't know how many times I talk to people who are like, I'm on all these supplements, but I don't really know if they're helping or not. With Thorne supplements, because of the quality, because of the ingredients in the most bioavailable form, I feel a difference when I am taking them. With Thorne, I never even have to question what's in each supplement because they do go the extra mile when it comes to quality, manufacturing, and ingredients. They use such thorough testing and a super clean manufacturing process that they've earned some of the highest certifications in the industry. They are not just my go-to supplement company, they are the go-to for so many functional medicine practitioners in my community. It's trusted. This brand is trusted by over 5 million customers, 47,000 healthcare professionals and pro athletes, 100 plus pro sports teams, and many U.S. national teams. Give your body what it really needs with Thorne. Go to thorne.fit/wholeness and use code wholeness for 10% off your first order. That's thorne.fit/wholeness, code wholeness, for 10% off your first order. Thorne.fit/wholeness, code wholeness. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Now, getting back to the concept of supporting your mental health through nutrition. So we talked about what to eat and how to eat to support optimal neurotransmitter signaling, but that might not necessarily be the root cause issue with your mental health. So I want to talk about another root cause issue that affects a lot of people's mental health, and that is blood sugar. Our blood sugar levels regulate our insulin level, which is an incredibly important hormone in keeping all of our hormones in balance. When blood sugar is imbalanced, negative mood symptoms can occur. So I want to give you some tips on how to balance blood sugar naturally so that you can minimize the anxiety, the depression, the lack of motivation that happens when we have imbalanced blood sugar. Number one, I've already talked about it, but get plenty of quality protein, healthy fat, and fiber. A diet that is high in quality protein and healthy fats and natural fiber like non-starchy vegetables or things like flaxseed and nuts. This is going to promote blood sugar control. If you are eating packaged food that has been ultra processed, then that's going to keep your body in an unsafe panic state that will manifest at the mood level. And so something to look for, even if you're looking at, like, let's talk about a protein bar, right? A lot of people are like, well, I need a protein bar. I got to have something on the go. If you take the total carbs, subtract it from fiber, and you still have a lot more carbs than protein in that bar, then it might not be promoting optimal mental health. You're going to be getting more carbs, less protein, and that's going to create a bigger blood sugar crash. So really start with loading up on protein the first meal of the day. So this is the second tip on managing blood sugar. Breakfast. Whether you break your fast at 6 a.m. or 11 a.m., that is actually when your body is the most reactive to sugar. So eating a breakfast high in healthy fat and protein, lower in carbs, especially those processed carbs, maybe even oatmeal could be triggering for some people, because that impacts your blood sugar balance throughout the whole day. Shoot for a savory breakfast over the sweet options and do an experiment. Try something different every day and see what really sticks with you. Number three, reorganize the food on your plate by eating your fibrous vegetables first, followed by healthy fats and protein, and leave your starchy or higher carb foods last. This actually can blunt the blood sugar spike by 70%. If everything on your plate is mixed, maybe start with just the veggies first and eat some of those, and then move on to the carbs last, if possible. I like to eat a lot of my food in a bowl, so that's kind of hard for me. If you must have bread or a sugary drink, or maybe you're at a really good Mexican restaurant and you want to have some chips and salsa, that's fine. Maybe save it for the end of the meal if possible, especially a drink like a margarita or something. Load up on protein first. Think about having a good protein snack before you go out to eat. That could be helpful as well. See what that does for your mood. Another tip. This is number four. Consider adding vinegar to your meals. Having vinegar before a meal can actually blunt, can blunt the blood sugar spike by up to 30%. So drinking one tablespoon of vinegar, like an apple cider vinegar, with 12 ounces of water before your meal reduces the blood sugar spike, and it also helps your body secrete more stomach acid and gastric juices to break your food down. And that's going to be really helpful for better digestion and better blood sugar support overall. This is number five, avoid or minimize snacking. You need to fill up on everything during your meal, and then you won't need to snack, right? This is really important. Waiting to eat for your next meal rather than snacking allows for your blood sugar and insulin to return to baseline. It's also a really good tip for people who struggle with gut issues. This is necessary to improve insulin sensitivity. If insulin is always elevated, if we're always asking our pancreas to produce insulin in response to our food, our bodies one day will stop responding and more insulin will need to be released to get the job done. This has a horrible impact on all of our hormones, including those reproductive hormones. If you are a female, I said I was going to get back to perimenopause. Bear with me, I will, but if you are over 35 as a female, and you're eating the way that you've always eaten, and somebody's telling you to eat five small snacks all throughout the day, no. Fill up on breakfast, lunch, dinner. Give your gut a rest in between. Give your gut a really long break while you're sleeping and a couple hours before bed, and maybe even a little bit after you wake up. And that is going to help reset that balance. Number six, move your body after eating. This is one of my favorite hacks. Just going for a walk after a meal is going to reduce your blood sugar spike and allow your muscles to uptake more sugar from the bloodstream instead of using so much insulin. That is probably the number one thing that I tell people starting out if they're struggling with blood sugar, is get your body moving after a meal. Number seven. Add fat to your carbs. If you must snack on occasion, don't carb alone. Add a healthy fat. That slows the uptake of carbs from the gut to the bloodstream. So this would be like having peanut butter to adding peanut butter to your apple, or having a spoonful of Greek yogurt with your dessert. This could be creating a special Greek yogurt snack. Like, I love this for my kids. They have Greek yogurt with a little bit of peanut butter and a little bit of honey. And this keeps them fuller longer and they feel like they've had a sweet treat. The last tip for blood sugar balance is to look for artificial sweeteners and avoid them. Do everything you can to avoid things like aspartame, sucralose, acesulfame potassium, or ACE-K as sometimes it's called. If something tastes sweet, it's going to affect your insulin levels. Even stevia, anything sweet will. Now, stevia is going to be safer than others. So if you're trying to wean down on your other sweeteners, stevia is going to be, as of right now in the research, a bit of a safer option. But keep in mind that anytime you're having something sweet, you are creating what is called the cephalic phase insulin response. Your brain is telling your body to produce more insulin. And we live in a world where everything is so sweet. So adjust your taste buds. Get rid of sweetened things. Stop sweetening your coffee. Oh my gosh, that was a game changer for me. When I stopped putting sweetener in my coffee, number one, I just like the taste of coffee. So it wasn't that hard for me. But number two, it really decreased my sugar cravings and it got me off that blood sugar roller coaster. All right, if you download my guide, you are going to get a list of ingredients to avoid. So this is things like some of those inflammatory oils that negatively impact your cellular cell membrane, cellular health and energy, different additives like MSG, yeast extract, high fructose corn syrup, artificial colors, and other things to look for to avoid, because any additives like that, it's going to be extra for your body to have to process. If your liver and if your gut is busy processing those additives, it's going to be harder for it to do all those other things that it needs to do for you to keep you mentally healthy. I also, in this guide, have a list of the best foods for mental health. So we're talking about things like dark chocolate, eggs, salmon, broccoli, berries, leafy greens, avocados, extra virgin olive oil, coffee can actually be a brain superfood, green tea, turmeric, nuts, seeds, rosemary, tomatoes, and grass-fed beef. So those are my main tips for mental health nutrition. I know groceries are super expensive right now across the board. Even your ultra processed foods that we know more and more recent studies are showing the harmful effects of those. We know that they're not great for us, but even those are super expensive. So this is the time to make some changes and load up on whole food sources. Even the frozen produce can be beneficial because it has been picked at its peak ripeness and then it is shipped out instead of being picked before it ripens and shipping out as it ripens real time. That is what happens with all of our fresh fruit and vegetables, and that might not be as nutrient dense as the frozen foods. So you can save a lot of money by going to frozen foods. Now, let me tell you something very interesting that has popped up recently in the news. The American Academy of Pediatrics has finally warned against genetically modified organisms. And this is just a really good reminder that it takes an average of 17 years for research to get into mainstream practice. Always, if somebody is questioning what you've read or what you've seen, or you feel like a practitioner isn't really listening to you, ask for a second opinion or go straight to the research and show that to them. Just because they're wearing a white lab coat, they are not always up to date on the latest research. So the fact that we finally have this large group of pediatricians warning us against genetically modified organisms and what it is doing for our kids' health, that's a really big deal. That's a good reminder to keep trusting your gut and your instincts when it comes to food. Now, middle-aged women in perimenopause. I told you I was going to touch on this just briefly because I've been diving into this so much. ADHD symptoms can really hit this time of life. And one of the reasons is because the brain does change up to 25% in our monthly cycle due to fluctuations of estrogen. And during perimenopause, when estrogen is like one of the first things that's out of balance, the first thing that really spikes, it might not even be spiking, but it could be the progesterone dropping off, all symptoms can heighten. So if you were already a little bit predisposed to ADHD and then having a cell phone made it worse, now your perimenopausal symptoms are going to make it worse. All symptoms are going to be heightened. I have not yet finished The Menopause Brain. It's another new book that I'm reading, but I recommend that one for anybody who's like, wait a minute, what is going on with my mental health and my brain right now in this phase of my life? So if you are experiencing distractibility, brain fog, go back to what I said at the beginning about nutrients for mental health. protein, B vitamins, you might benefit from a supplement like L-theanine or tyrosine. Another one that I really like is called Dopa Plus that can really give you that boost of dopamine that you might be needing during this phase of life. For hormone support, if you're really wanting to look to test your hormones and see where they are, that is definitely something I can run for you through the Dutch test, or you can get your doctor to run blood labs for you. And the best time to do that is day 19 to 21 of your cycle. If you run it at any other time of your cycle, it might not be as great of a picture of what's going on with your hormones. But Dutch test can be a really helpful way to determine what is happening for your hormones and your cortisol and even some of your B vitamins and glutathione, which is our master antioxidant. And it creates a really pretty picture, maybe not so pretty depending on what you're experiencing, but it creates a really clear picture of where you are in life right now. And it can help me to guide you through what you need to support your unique body. So many women, especially over 35, start to struggle with symptoms of low progesterone. Progesterone will start to drop because, I mean, progesterone means progestation. And as we get older, we are not going to be gestating anymore, right? So some of these symptoms are anxiety, irritability, headaches, cravings, hot flashes, weight gain that makes no sense, irregular periods, painful periods or cramps, trouble sleeping, acne. What to do with that would be to start cycle syncing. My favorite app for that is MyFlow, M-Y-F-L-O. There's a whole bunch of them, but this one is M-Y-F-L-O, all one word. I think it's like $1.99 to get, but start tracking your cycle to see if some of these symptoms are hitting during your luteal phase. So this app will track your follicular, ovulatory, luteal, and menstrual phase. We have four phases. Your brain makes changes at every single one of those phases. So I highly encourage you getting onto that app and starting to track your symptoms. It's a helpful screenshot of what's going on so that even before you get some testing done, you have been able to take agency over your body. You know what's happening and you know how better to support it, because I can't support your body as well as you can. I am not living in your body. I am not experiencing your symptoms. I have plenty of my own, believe me. But that is a great way to get started if you are on this hormone journey and you're wanting to know what is going on with my hormones. And with that, I am going to end this episode by reminding you that everything is connected. Your brain is connected to your gut. And now we've got this new study, if you want to know more about it, in this new book, The Autoimmune Cure by Dr. Sarah Gottfried. She talks a lot about the study of psychoneuroimmunology or psychoneuroimmunoendocrinology, where your brain is working with your immune system, which is working through your hormones, your reproductive system, and everything is integrated. We cannot just say, I'm only going to address my serotonin and I'm going to feel better, because that might not be the missing puzzle piece. There might be something else happening, which, bringing this full circle, is why I so much love the functional medicine approach of integrating all things. So I hope this week you can take some intentional time to move your body, to breathe, to remind your body that it's safe, to give yourself some positivity, whether it's something to look forward to or reading some scripture that reminds you of your identity. This is something that I personally have been really working on lately, because my identity is in what I achieve, and that is not lasting. That's not a lasting foundation. So give yourself some support, what you need to feel safe this week, and that's going to look different for everybody. But I will be back next week with another informative and hopefully inspiring podcast episode. Have a great week. The tiniest spark leads to the biggest blaze, and I hope that today's episode sparks you on a journey to healing and wholeness. Thanks for listening to Sparking Wholeness. For more information on what I do and my coaching programs, or maybe just to reach out and say hey, find me at sparkingwholeness.com or on Instagram at sparkingwholeness. Have a fabulous week.